Welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. Today's topic is Insight into WebSphere Process Server Tracing. Today's presenter is Lalitha Chandran. Lalitha has been with the WebSphere Process Server Technical Support Team for more than 6 years. In this capacity, she works closely with clients to provide solutions to core SOA problems, ensuring customer satisfaction. She takes this experience back to development teams to improve product serviceability. At this point in time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Lalitha.
Thank you, Joseph. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining in. Slide number 2. Where it starts. I'm pretty sure each one of you might have done some kind of programming, like Java, C, C++, or even BASIC. And the first thing we learn is how to print a message to the console, for example, in a Hello World application. And although this print statement is very simple and basic, with experience, we realize it is very powerful when it comes to troubleshooting problems. I'm sure you'll all agree with me here. And what is WebSphere Process Server? It is nothing but a huge Java program. And when you're working with it and hit a problem, do you have access to the source code? No. So you can't put your own print statements in there. So what do you do? Here's where tracing comes into the picture. Traces are nothing but print statements throughout process server code level that can be used to understand the flow of events. And I have put together this presentation to give you some pointers on what to look for in the traces when you're reviewing them. Slide number 3. Now, given that we have so many components in process server, tracing around process server can be a vast topic. Hence, in today's session, I am narrowing it down to a particular scenario and a particular set of traces. So what am I going to cover today? Have one component call the other, turn on SC and SIB traces, and go over some of the important trace points. But of course, for some introduction. Slide number 4. Let's get our definitions and see what is the difference between logging and tracing. Logging is fairly low volume, as it is on all the time, and it's something important like error or warning messages. Tracing, on the other hand, can be as verbose as you want it to be, and these are enabled only when there's a problem. Tracing is typically used to indicate things like which components are called, how they are called, what data is passed into a method, etc. If I had to draw a parallel for logging traces in the real world, I'd probably use the package tracking mechanism we have. Imagine you are having a package delivered. It's only when you have not received the package, you go and use the tracking mechanism, and then you know how important it is. The rest of this slide is pretty straightforward. Slide number 5. Before I start talking about the traces, let me tell you that the logs and SFTCs are equally important. They're the first things to look into when something goes wrong. Your systemout.log will have an error stack in most of the cases, or some warning messages. But sometimes, instead of systemout.log, you will find it in the systemerror.log or even in the SFDC. SFDC is abbreviated for first failure data capture. Basically, what this means is, the moment there is a problem in the system, it will be logged to the SFDC files to show the origin of the issue. This is especially helpful when a problem in one component causes a problem in another component upstream. So don't miss looking at the SFTCs. Slide number 6. Okay, now I just could not have the slide, this presentation of tracing. It had to be in there. But I'm pretty sure you're aware that the simplest way you can enable traces is in the administrative console. You can choose from the list of the trace string provided, or you can enter a trace string directly into the text box. One thing to note is, if you enable the traces in the runtime configuration, the traces are effective immediately, so you don't need a restart. However, if you had to restart the servers for some reason, these trace settings are lost. So if you still want your trace settings to be effective after the restart, set them in the configuration tab, or better, even both. Slide number 7. This is one thing definitely worth mentioning. Sometimes with a lot of tracing, the data written to the files can be huge, especially if you are sending more than a few requests. So you don't want to lose the trace files as it can be overwritten. So there's a place in the administrative console where you can actually configure the historical trace file size so that you will always have the traces you're interested in. So always make sure to check on this. Slide number 8. Now, the question is, how do you know what trace to enable? Generally speaking, the exception stack or the error that you see in the systemout.log will help you determine which traces to enable. For example, in the stack that you see in the slide, the null pointer exception seems to be coming from the SEA code. So in this case, turning on the SEA traces might be a good idea. The article I have referred here, that's the collect troubleshooting data, it's basically the must gather, which will tell you more about different traces that you can turn on for different components. It's a good reference when it comes to turning on the traces. Slide number 9. Now that we have covered our basics, let's take a look at the example that we'll be discussing today in more detail. We have two components, the caller Java component and the callee Java component. The caller Java component is invoking the callee Java component in an asynchronous manner. As you can see, both the components log a message as the first and last statement, and all the callee Java component does is just sleep for a few seconds, just to stimulate some kind of an activity. Now, the traces I'm going to focus on are SIB and SCA traces, as mentioned on the slide. Some of the trace points might need a finer trace, in which case I will mention it individually. Slide number 10. Before I jump into the traces, I just want to give you an overview of what's happening so that, you know, it doesn't get too overwhelming. Broadly speaking, we will first see what components are being invoked, then the request that is being sent, and finally the response that is sent in by the callee Java component, IRR in short. Also, since this is an asynchronous invocation, let's take a look at the request as it's being placed in the queue, that is in the source, and when it is being picked up at the target. Slide number 11. The first thing you will notice in the traces is the handlers. The way messages are processed in process server is through different handlers. Example, the security handlers or the unit of work handlers. So in the lifetime of a message, it can be processed by various handlers. And since in our scenario, we have a Java component, you will see that respective handler processing this message in addition to the other handlers. Slide number 12. This is the line that will tell you what invocation is being carried out. You'll definitely find this line pretty useful. Not only will it tell you which components or which modules are being invoked, it will also tell you how they are being invoked, most importantly. So, invocation style as we say it. In this slide, we can see it was invoked asynchronously as expected. If it were a synchronous invocation, you would see just invoke instead of the method invoke async. The reason why this line is important is because the invocation style itself affects other aspects in process server, and I'll just spend the next three slides quickly talking about it. Slide number 13. So, quick recap on the invocation style. Broadly speaking, we have synchronous and asynchronous invocations. We also have others like asynchronous with deferred response and asynchronous with callback. So let's look at two aspects here, right? In synchronous invocation, the same thread processes the source and target component, but in an asynchronous invocation, that's not the case. So in this slide, you can see that there's a different thread that is basically executing the callee Java component system out. The other thing is the caller is blocked in synchronous invocation, so the last statement in the caller Java component is not printed until the callee Java component finishes. So basically, it's blocked until the target finishes. That's not the case in asynchronous navigation. Slide number 14. I just put together this slide just to show you how invocation styles are important and how they can affect other different SCA behaviors like transactions, error handling, and recovery. Slide number 15. And if you ever need to change the behavior that you're seeing in the traces, here's a nice reference on it. This article talks about the different parameters that affect the invocation styles, like preferred interaction style or the operation type. I would definitely say it's a must read. Slide number 16. Now that you've seen the invocation in the traces, let's see the request. That's the first R in the IRR. This trace point, that's the send request method, basically tells that the request has been sent from the source component. You can see what destination it was sent to. If you notice, this queue is nothing but for the callee Java component. But once the message is sent to this queue, it is automatically forwarded to the module queue, that is the SCA/test trace. Another thing to note is that the qualifier settings is, you can see the qualifier settings in this message. For example, the request expiration or the response expiration value in there. Slide number 17. And right before the message is written into the queue, you can see the serialized message in the traces. You can find the message contents here as well. So this could be useful when you are having issues with the business objects and you want to look at what the serialized message looked before it was put in the queue. Slide number 18. At this point in the SIB traces, you should see these trace points. Remember, I told you that the message will be forwarded to the module queue. The first two lines exactly tell you that the message has been placed in the module queue, that is the SCA/test trace. But the trace point in the third bullet is what is important, because it shows that the message is committed to the queue. Because unless a message is committed to a queue, it is not available for processing for the next component. So you have to make sure that you do see this line in the traces and that the message is committed. Slide number 19. These are the request was sent and that the message was committed. So that's good. So now the request is ready to be picked up and processed by the target component. There's a beep called the service SI bus message beam, and this MDB keeps listening for the messages in the module queue. As soon as there's a message on the module queue, it is picked up and the on message method is executed, which is what you see in the first three lines. As earlier, before processing the serialized inbound message is printed out on the console. So you can again look at the message contents. Another point to note is that from now on, the processing is done on a different thread than before, because now this is the target component. Slide number 20. This brings us to the last part in the IRR, that's the response. It's pretty straightforward. As before, you can see the message is being written down to the traces before it's going to be written down to the queue. So again, like the header and the message body will be printed out in traces. Slide number 21. Now, the response message is again committed to the queue in the SIB traces. So this brings us to a complete end-to-end processing. Slide number 22. Now, along the processing, you will see several of these lines. Basically, this is nothing but a message dump. In such a message dump, you can see some of the qualifier settings, like the suspend transaction or the reliability. Now, it could be a useful line when you have to verify some of these qualifier settings in the traces. Slide number 23. Now that we have seen a trace point in a successful scenario, let's see what happens when there is a failure. For this, I have modified our original scenario to introduce a null pointer exception in the callee Java component. What's going to happen after the exception is thrown is that the MDB is going to roll back this message to the module queue. Since the processing was not successful, the message is then again picked up and processed. This will happen until the configured retries on the module queue, which is usually 5, and then a failed event will be generated since this is an asynchronous invocation. Slide number 24. There you see, there's our null pointer exception. You can see that it was originated in the Kali Java component. One thing to note is that the exception will be checked to see if it's a business exception or not. If the exception is a business exception, the exception is going to be passed back to the caller and no failed events will be created. But in our case, since this was a runtime exception, the invocation fails and the onMessage method returns with an exception. And this is going to cause the rollback of the message. Slide number 25. Now, over here, you can see that the message was received by the MDB again, and the invocation was started. But really, how would you differentiate this processing with the original processing? That's, in other words, how would you know that this is actually a retry of the same message? Slide number 26. So, if you closely look on the message gem like we saw previously, you would see something like this. If you look for the keyword redelivered count, you would see that it's 1 right now, which basically means it's a retry. If it's 1 or anything above, that will tell you that this message is a retry, 1. So sometimes that could be helpful when you have like a lot of messages in the traces and you want to know which one is a retry and which one is not. Slide number 27. Now, we have seen some of the trace points, namely the invocation, the request, and the response. And we've also seen a failure scenario. But let me give you 2 examples to show you how the traces can actually help. Sometimes these trace points might not give away the solution directly, but it can give you some important clues. In our first example, we have a beeper which is calling an MQ import. Now, and it's normal for the MQ backend to take longer than 2 minutes to respond. The problem was that the client was seeing a timeout exception. So my first reaction was to check up on the reference qualifiers, namely the request expiration or the response expiration qualifier. And as you can see in this slide, there were none. But still, we were seeing the timeout error. Slide number 28. So, we connected the SE traces as next step, and I looked for the keyword request expiration in the traces. And what I found was it was being set to 115 seconds. This gave us the clue that the runtime was setting this value under the covers. And a little bit more investigations, we came to see that if you're calling an asynchronous implementation like the MQ import in this case in a synchronous manner, the runtime is going to switch that invocation to an asynchronous one, and it will also set the default expiration value to the transaction timeout setting -5, which is exactly the case here. That's the 120 seconds of the transaction timeout -5, that's 115 seconds. This is also known as the sync over async switch. And for this, and for many other reasons, it's not recommended pattern to use. And as soon as the client switched the synchronous to an asynchronous, the problem was solved. Slide number 29. In the next example, I'm going to bring back our scenario and modify the caller Java component so that we also invoke the response this time. And it's going to wait indefinitely while it tries to wait for to receive the response. This invocation style is also called as the asynchronous default response. When we execute this scenario, the problem is that there is no response. The second component is not invoked. I've seen this problem happening many times. So let's turn on the traces and see what's happening. So as you can see, the first bullet tells us that the invocation was being done, and the second set of traces said the request was sent at the source, which is good. Slide number 30. Next, we can see that the SIB did place a message in the module queue, but we don't see the message being committed. Like I mentioned earlier, if the message is not committed, it won't be available for the target component to process it. The reference qualifier, known as the asynchronous invocation, controls this message transaction. Since it's set to commit, the message won't commit unless the source transaction is committed. And since the source is waiting for a response indefinitely, we have entered a deadlock. So one of the solutions here is to change the qualifier value to call. This will allow the message to be committed immediately, and hence the problem was resolved. Slide number 31. So hopefully the trace points that we went through today will be helpful to you. Some of the things that we saw was the invocation, the request, and the response. So hopefully you will find them useful when you are reviewing the traces next time. Slide number 32. Here are some of the references that I mentioned, and all of these are good references, but I would like to give a special mention to the presentation on cross-component traces. That's the seventh link. Thank you for listening today, and at this point, I would like to turn it back to Joseph.
Thank you, Vanessa, for a great presentation. At this point in time, Jackie, we would like to open the lines for questions.
We have no questions on the phone.
Thank you, Jackie. And I am not showing any questions in the group chat either. So at this point in time, we will conclude the presentation.